Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
In this episode of the Wash Up Walk-Ons podcast, Drake and Kevin leave me high and dry, which is not an uncommon occurrence. But we have a special co-host that joins the show. Thankful that he did. I think he provided some really good insight. We kind of intro him for about 10, 15 minutes, and then we get to the breakdown of the game, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it. The Bowl is back, baby. Let's have a day. Let's go. Oh, baby, here we are, the Washed Up Walk-Ons podcast. It's a special edition today. Welcome in, everybody. First off, feels good to have all four trophies in the building. Maybe even feels better that we didn't even have to play Iowa State this year. I know that that's digging. I know that that's digging in Cyclone Nation's just soul right now because they feel really good. Like they feel like they have a better team than Iowa. It's super debatable at this point, especially after Iowa's last six games, but they feel like they have the better team. They're going to hold on to that higher ranking. I'm not so sure about it. We'll get into it. Interesting conversation, interesting guest host on today's show. For those watching the YouTube version a week later, you can see him in the screen. He's wearing his Green Bay Packers gear. He's a huge Pack fan, always has been. He has made an appearance on the show before, once before, on the sort of infamous episode where it was the night before my wedding and we had the entire wedding party at the house, and we did an episode that was where we sort of predicted Oliver Martin's career, and then we took a ton of shit for it. Granted, we probably could have predicted it in a little bit nicer way. He is my best friend from high school, the best man in my wedding, and the best statistical passing quarterback in the history of Iowa high school football. He is Blake Gimble. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, well, man, thanks for having me. I'm on the couch yesterday after the game, and I get a text that Drake and Kevin, possibly not Drake, we don't know where he's at, can't do the show today. So, yeah, bringing me on, thank you for that. I know my last appearance, we might not have been in the best mindset as it was very late into the evening that night, right before the wedding. So, excited to get on here and do this one.
Why, at this point, we're thinking, well, Kluver, why did you bring on your best friend from high school? What is this podcast turning into? Great question, Washed Up Walk-On Army. First of all, I introed him as the potential potentially the best statistical passing quarterback in the state of Iowa, regardless of class. In 4A, it's not even close. I've got the record books up, people. This is me validating Blake Gimble as a football, somewhat football professional person, someone who has a valid opinion, right? So we are the same year. Blake was our quarterback in my class at Marshalltown. Blake, not only does he hold the best all-time 4A passing game yards-wise, he holds three of the top seven in 4A. 567 against Sioux City East, 520 against Ames, and 488 versus Mason City. That's three of the top seven most yards in a game in 4A. You only are second on the all-time list, regardless of class, to some Porter Hummel kid who in 2014 threw for 583. He played for West Sioux Howardin versus, and they played Lawton Bronson. So
is that eight man?
No, it's 11 man, but okay. But he threw for more than you, which,
hey, yeah, good for him.
But you've got some records there. As far as season passing yards, all time in the history of the state of Iowa, doesn't matter what class you're talking about, Blake is the only person to ever throw for more than 3,900 yards. He happened to do it twice, 2 years in a row, the same exact number 2 years in a row, 3,979 yards in 2011, 3,979 yards in 2012. You're a pussy. You couldn't throw for 4,000.
Well, it's a little ridiculous that somebody couldn't catch a slant or just a simple stop route just to get it up over 4K as well. So a lot of things could have went into that.
You only started for 2 years, which makes a lot of these things even more impressive. On the all-time passing yards in a career, you are sixth in the state. All five of the people ahead of you started for 3 years. You started for two. You ended with 8,206 passing yards. You got a few second string reps in our sophomore year. For some reason, we decided to play Hauser that year, so that was interesting. Speaking of catches, does not matter what class. You sit atop the completions record as well. You threw for 42 completions in a single game twice. You have both of those top records as well. Completions in a season, you also hold that record, no matter what class we're talking about. 301 completions in a season. You are also third on that list with the previous year with 269. So you hold two of the top three seasons ever in Iowa history there. And I think the only other, I don't know where the other record was, but I think we validated you. I believe our senior and junior seasons, we had the most passing yards per game of any team in the history of the state of Iowa. And we hold both 2011 and 2012, the top there. So really what all that means is Blake knows what he's talking about. He's a quarterback. He can speak to quarterback play. Not only did he do that in high school, he went on to Division II and played for Southwest Minnesota State, the Stangs. Okay.
The Stangs.
The Mustangs in Marshall, Minnesota.
Yep.
And you were there for like 18 years, it felt like, as well. So
I was there for six, but
yeah, you were there for six. You got
would
the
have
medical,
been five.
You got the medical red shirt, right?
Yep, I did. It just an unfortunate circumstance. My true senior year, tore my labrum in my shoulder, so had to take another med red for that. So that is why I ultimately was there for 6 years. Wasn't in the plan, but originally when I got there, took just your typical red shirt freshman year. Mm-hmm. So with two redshirt years. It was funny too, because I was already graduated, so I had to declare a new major, declared a PE major my senior year. Once the season is over, pretty much just dropped every class and spent the next 3.5-4 weeks just kind of relaxing while Danielle and I were looking for a house in Minneapolis. So it was kind of nice that I was able to do that and was already graduated, not worrying about anything else.
It's that elite last year. If you would have been playing now, you would have had an opportunity to come back for a seventh year.
Wouldn't that be something? There's no way I would have done that because, I mean, that sixth year, man, you see some people that are 18, 17 rolling in. I mean, they're young.
And well, it's just like, yeah, it's like the guys now, they even on Iowa last week, they were kind of talking about how most of them aren't going to come back. Like,
yeah,
you have it in your mind like, oh, I've been here a long time. Like at some point, I'm done with college. Like I need to live my life.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these guys are thinking what they're going to do for jobs soon. I mean, the clock's ticking. I mean, it's time to move on and just kind of start life as it is. I mean, you know, you're not going to go to the league. So there comes a time where that mindset has to switch.
Yeah, it would be weird to have an opportunity for a sixth year. Anyway, Blake is not only all of those things. So again, just if you listen through all that, he has like, when we talk about like Cooper DeJean or Cooper DeJean, the recruit this year for Iowa, who like was going nuts, threw for like 3,500 yards, 42 touchdowns in a year. Like Blake, he beat all that. He had all of that. Now, why didn't Blake go D1? You have to ask my father that. There's no one on earth that's still pissed off to this day than Todd Kluver because Blake did not get a Division I offer.
I think I've seen him probably four or five times since kind of senior year ended. And every single time that he sees me, the number one thing that he leads with is, you know how many fucking schools you could have played D1 for? And it's just like, I mean, you don't know what to say to that because where I ended up at SMSU, I would never change that for the world. So just for him to say that and to still hold that grudge and to have that chip on his shoulder for me is incredible.
Oh, I'm telling you, he will die pissed off that you did not at least walk on to a Division I school. It is interesting. I think for those that don't know, we ran an absolute Texas Tech spread offense at Marshalltown. Shout out Dave Holdeman, who potentially could be listening to the podcast. He's hit me up a couple times post our high school career and said like that he likes the podcast and that he's been following me through my journey at Iowa. So we threw probably 60 to 70 times a game.
Yeah. I mean, when the spread was implemented, people were doing it passing maybe 30, 40 times a game back when like Pashong was even coming up. I mean, a 30 pass game was huge. And then we kind of made it standard that we were going to put it in the air 50 times and then sometimes 60, just depending on the game, how it was going, what the score was. But that was fine for us because I had a 70% completion percentage. Like we were throwing the ball everywhere and completing it. We also had receivers that were lightning. We had Daquan out there, ends up playing at Oregon. We have the Stephenson brothers that joined me at SMSU. Yeah. You're not going to catch them in the open field. It's just not going to happen. I mean, Hauser switching from quarterback to receiver. He even had a hell of a year out there for us too. So we had speed everywhere on the field and nobody was catching up to us. It was incredible. So what we were doing was so new to everybody else too. That's why it works so well because I don't care what high school you go to, even sometimes Valley and Dowling. I mean, you're not ready for a sound passing attack 60 times a game. I mean, we're going to put up some points.
Enough about high school. Blake was better than you if you were a quarterback in high school. Sorry. What Blake is also probably more than of you, and the reason he's on this podcast with me, because I wouldn't bring him on here if it wasn't the case, he is one of the biggest Hawkeye fans that I know. Okay, there's a lot of you guys that are nuts. You're crazy Hawkeye fans. You've sent me pictures of your basements, all this stuff. I'm telling you, from the minute I met Blake Gimble in like second or third grade till now, he has been a bigger Hawkeye fan and been more concerned about the outcome of the Hawkeye games than myself, even when I was in the program. Like he was that big of a fan. Now, as of late, joining the real world, he has worked on Saturdays, which is super unfortunate for the last few years, which means he hasn't been able to catch all of every Iowa game. But this Wisconsin game, which by the way, this Wisconsin game, okay, we got the trophies, baby. We got all of them.
Let's go.
The bowl returns.
It's been too long.
Iowa State, we didn't play. We got the Cy Hawk trophy. All right. Nebraska, we got the Heartland. We've got the Heroes trophy. We just beat Wisconsin for the Heartland trophy. And of course, we stomped Minnesota earlier in the year for the Pig. All four trophies, a beautiful graphic by Iowa Football put out yesterday on Twitter. We got them all. We got them all. Blake, this was your first full Iowa game of the year. You're usually listening on the radio as you're delivering to the Minnesota area.
Yeah.
What was your opinion of the game yesterday, just overall?
Honestly, I thought it was fantastic because it showed, for one, that, I mean, through and through, Iowa was the dominant team yesterday. You know, we kind of had that stalemate in the first half, just back and forth, three and out, three and out, three and out. You just wasted a minute and a half off the clock. Like, that's what the goal was, pretty much. I mean, even to come out in the second half, we finally get our receivers loose a little bit, soften up that Wisconsin defense. It just felt good to kind of just take the bull by the horns and just take them out. I mean, even when Iowa's offense was kind of stale in the first half, I don't know about you, but I wasn't really worried because I knew our defense was just going to come out there and just shut it down. I mean, Mertz had that fantastic game against Illinois, first game of the year. He put up four touchdowns. That's not normal for Wisconsin. So everybody's like, oh, we're back. You know, like, this dude might be a Heisman candidate. Everybody wants him. How does he end up at Wisconsin? Well, when you play a Big Ten season, you got some breakups in the season. They haven't played a full schedule. They've had some postponements, delays, and everything. You know, they honestly look pretty sloppy to start the game with their with a couple fumbles and things like that. I mean, they weren't a sound team at all. So it was nice to just kind of lay the hammer down on a team like Wisconsin and do what we did to them.
It feels really good to beat Wisconsin. As a former player who is 1-4 against them, the elusiveness of the bowl trophy, you're right. It to be able to do that to Wisconsin, who has just had our number, it just feels right. Not only that, but we put six in a row, which has only been done twice since I believe 2009, six wins in a row is nothing to just blow over. Okay. Obviously we won 12 in a row in 2015, kind of an outlier season. You don't just win six games in a row. Like, that's half a season without losing a game. Not only that, but we're in the middle of a Big Ten schedule. And you're right, Blake. I think Wisconsin not having they had a weird year. They played two games, then they had two games off for COVID. Then they played another two games, had another game off for COVID in there somewhere. So I talked about it. I do a reaction podcast for the Patreon subscribers. And I talked about how it's really hard to get better every day, get better as there's this week by week mentality. I'm sure you guys had it at SMSU too. Every team has it, right? You get a little bit better each week and then you build on that brick and you just build brick by brick. And by the end of the season, you look like a really polished team. Things are flowing. Offense knows what it's doing. It knows its identity. The defense, they know where they fit. They kind of know and feel where everybody, the guy to the right, the guy to the left, they know what's happening. With a season like Wisconsin's had, it's really hard to get that continuity. And so the mistakes that we saw from them, coupled with the fact that I don't think this is a normal Wisconsin team, they don't have a Monty Ball, a Melvin Gordon, a Jonathan Taylor. I mean, those are three guys that while I was there, we played against. That's insane.
And went off against us as well.
Because they went off against everybody. I mean, they've had this stable of running backs and behind it, a usual offensive line that is second to none in size. I mean, they are 6'8", 6'10". They've had like a 7-footer one year. I think it was something stupid. Like, they just had these insane guys. So they just don't have that right now. And couple that with a weird season and the fact that Iowa is also proven to be a really good team down the stretch here. We finally freaking got one and it feels really good. Let's talk about where that leaves us because there's this real bittersweet taste in the Hawkeye fans' mouth right now. Because after yesterday, Northwestern sits at 6-1 overall. Iowa 6-2 overall. Obviously, the 1-point loss in the second week of the season. The last time we lost the game was Northwestern 21-20. And that's what has secured them the spot in the Big Ten Championship this year over the Hawkeyes. What are your feelings on that? I mean, that hurts a little bit right there.
Yeah, it's tough to swallow. And funny story, actually. So before I got to watch yesterday's game, the two quarters of football that I did get to watch was the fourth quarter of the Penn State game and then the very first quarter of the Iowa game when what were we up 17-0 after the first quarter,
yeah,
I believe. And I had my I had my engagement pictures that day. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking, let's just go get these over with. Iowa's going to roll this Northwestern team. You know, they are what they are. I don't really think there's anything too special about them. I guarantee if we would play next week, I mean, Iowa's going to take them to the woodshed. I watched a little bit of their game yesterday. But unfortunately, that's not the way it works. We didn't get those games at the beginning of the year to kind of go through what we do and don't like as an offense, what we can kind of throw out. I thought we were still trying to find our identity that game. You know, you can start fast, but then you still have three quarters to play. And
well, we threw the ball 50 times. So
yeah, well,
that was an issue. We didn't have Blake Gimble at quarterback. If we had Blake Gimble at quarterback, we would have been fine throwing the ball 50 times a game. And we're going to talk about Spencer Petras here in a second too, because I think that's where you can really offer some knowledge, but you're right. We didn't have that warm up. Did you guys have in D2? Did you guys have that kind of warm up in the beginning of the season where you got it? I mean, what's the mindset early on as an offense where you do get to kind of figure out what you know, what plays work, what plays don't work? What's that like early in the season as an offense trying to figure that out?
Yeah. So for us in D2, we start our conference games right away.
You're right away. That's what I thought.
Yeah. And so we play a 12-game season and it's all against NSIC opponents, the Northern Sun Intercollegiate Conference. That's who we are. They switched our schedules at the end of the year. So my very senior season, we played Mankato first. They were in our conference. They were in the South with us. Typically, your first four games are against teams from the North. Mm-hmm. So you're talking like your Duluth, your Bemidji, St. Cloud State, teams like that. So, I mean, those aren't games you can lose, but at the same time, it doesn't affect your standings for the South. So right. I guess that's kind of how you can put it. But if you're looking for a playoff berth, or we have one bowl game, it's called the Mineral Water Bowl. If you're trying to look for a berth of that, you don't come out and lay an egg the first two games of the season, because right. you might as well park it. So, I mean, it's tough. You got to figure it out right away. You got to be clicking, because we don't have the luxury of kind of any type of warm up, I should say.
Yeah. Spencer Petras, who, by the way, he broke all of Goff's records out in California. Blake's stats were better than those two. Spencer Petras, first year starting quarterback, doesn't get an off season like a normal starting quarterback would get, like a normal any quarterback would get. He goes from taking second string reps, right? So this is realistically what he's gotten: second string reps. Now imagine this, because I know that for the first couple years of your career, you were a backup.
Yep.
Second string reps all the way up until would have been about 12 months ago, as Nate Stanley the Great finishes his career as a Hawkeye.
Love him.
I know
Love
you're
him.
A huge Nate Stanley fan.
It's huge. And the fact he's on the Vikings practice squad is even better.
Yeah. So we roll into January, probably second week or third week of January. Spencer Petras comes onto campus. He gets 8 weeks of strength and conditioning, which is for Iowa, heavy strength and conditioning time. Most position groups, this is obviously the 8 weeks leading up to spring ball, which is where the season gets cut off in this 2020 journey. So we got 8 weeks. The team probably didn't even start throwing until week two of activities, maybe week three, realistically. And from there, they were probably going two or three times a week. So Spencer got, as the number one quarterback with his number one receivers, he got about 6 or 7 weeks, maybe 15 to 20 hours of throwing with these guys. And then the rest of the summer, nothing was the same. He hardly got any time with them. He got a little bit of time in camp, and now he comes into the season. He's got an only Big Ten schedule. What, I mean, with that amount of prep, can we even expect as a quarterback for him to feel comfortable back there? Like, it's different when you go from the practice field to the game field. And I'm sure that you felt that as well. Talk about that a little bit and like how little of preparation that actually is for a guy to go out and lead an offense.
Yeah. Petras is definitely put into a tough spot. It doesn't matter who you are, if you don't have the right reps, even in an off season, but when really it matters is fall camp. That's when your timing comes together. But those off season reps, you get what, 15 to 20 hours, just throwing what, 7-on-7, maybe just routes on air too. Yep. That helps in a way that you kind of feel the way that your receivers run the route. And that's really about it. You don't get much out of that, because if you don't have a defense out there, or if you don't have pads on it, nothing is the same. You're either going to be, it's going to be faster because guys don't have their pads and helmets on. Yep. It's 7-on-7 and just routes on air is not the same. Anybody can go out and do that and just throw around and maybe not have a good time, but you'll definitely take it serious and whatnot. But when you get into fall camp, you have to get as many reps as you can, because it is fast out there. I mean, if you come in there and you've never taken a snap in the Big Ten, let alone Division II, your eyes are going to widen and things are going to go tough. It's not going to go your way, but you have to go through that multiple times. And if you haven't had the time and preparation to do that, well, some of the things that, and some of the criticisms of Spencer that I think everybody has at this point are going to come about. But I promise you, with this year, with an off season, heading into next season, everybody just relax a bit, because that dude can throw the ball. There's no doubt in my mind that he can throw the ball.
You're giving all of Hawkeye Nation right now the Aaron Rodgers relax, huh?
Well, I might have to if I'm wearing the Packers. I mean, can we go back to when Stansy first took over? That man was so wild out of games. He'd be throwing 10 yards over receiver's head. He couldn't calm down. He couldn't keep his feet right. I mean, he was the backup for Jay Christensen, and until he got comfortable, then we didn't really see the true Ricky Stansy. Granted, this year is an asterisk year, whatever you want to call it. I don't think it's that way for us, because we're the only team in the Big Ten that hasn't had a game canceled yet.
True.
I mean, I think that says a lot about the program doing things right. Maybe a little bit of luck is involved with that, but this is a great run through for Spencer and a great introduction to what he's going to be for us in the upcoming years. And so I think people just need to pump the brakes just a little bit, because he's shown the flashes this year that he can be a fantastic quarterback. And I think he's going to be.
Obviously the main criticisms was he's throwing it too hard. He obviously has a rocket of an arm.
For sure.
He throws it too hard. He gets happy feet in the pocket. He's always looking at the number one receiver. All criticisms that make sense from a guy who just didn't have that fall camp experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's just a comfortability standpoint.
Just hasn't had the time in live situations.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the biggest things for him to work on in the offseason would just be, he does get locked on that number one receiver a little bit. He needs to know pre-snap that he's going to have that. It's going to be there. He can look a safety off. He can move a linebacker with his eyes. Like, your eyes are everything at the quarterback position. And that's what he needs to get better at. Because honestly, in the first half of that game yesterday, I almost knew what was coming before it was pre-snap. I mean, you can just kind of see the setup and the way that the formation's laid out, that, okay, well, he's going to throw the out here to Marcette, or just, it was too simplified. And he was almost making it too easy for Wisconsin to just kind of sit back on their heels, let everything come to them, and then they could just break and react to it. There was nothing high tech that he was doing out there.
And I think they've probably dumbed it down a little bit. Like, they're trying to help him out. He's trying to do the best he can. And what's crazy about it is, with even all the struggles that they've gone through, Hey guys, want to interrupt the show to let you guys know that we are sponsored by Indeed. Yes, 2020 has already changed so many things in the way that we work, and businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient every day, which means that every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job posts, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a $75 credit for free at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now. It's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. Here they sit still on a 6-game winning streak, 6-2. After on Tuesday night, they're most likely going to be ranked in the top 15 in the country. Nope. And that and everyone, like, after game two, where we did lose that 1-point game to Northwestern, this is not where anyone in Hawkeye Nation thought the Hawks would be sitting. And so I think we can be happy overall. You're right. The first half was, it was just a shitty football game. Like, yeah. It wasn't even fun to watch. It was like, okay. 3 yards, 2 yards, negative yard, punt. All right, other team punt, other team punt. Even when we got the fumble, the miscue from Mertz in the backfield, it was like, okay, we'll just kick a field goal. And when we kicked the field goal, being in games against Wisconsin myself, whenever we got points at all, if we could get 3 points, a safety, I don't care. It felt good. I was like 3-0. Shit, we might win this game. We might win this game.
Honestly, I mean, 3-0 would have won the game if not for Charlie Jones. We can get to that. But that fumble right there and that mishap right there is the only reason Wisconsin scored yesterday. So I thought the same thing. A field goal at this stage of the game? Huge.
Huge. Then we get another one. Keith doinks it off the post. The bank is open. 6-0 going into half. I'm like, well, shit, it could be another 10-6 game we got on our hands here from 2015. Then we come out in the second half. I'm going to pull up real quick the play-by-play. We get into the second half. So the first half, nothing happens. We get 2 field goals, right? They come out. They go on a 9-play drive. And now we get lucky. They miss a field goal. We're like, holy shit, everything's going our way. And our defense is playing their balls off. And and we come out, and all of a sudden we score a freaking touchdown. Spencer, he's hot and he's cold. Freaking Katy Perry. He somehow pass complete to Smith Marset. We go for a run, an incomplete pass. And then we throw a beautiful ball to, what happened here? We go to, we throw a beautiful ball to Amir Smith-Marset in the corner of the end zone. Just a perfect pass.
Right.
Lays out.
I was nervous about that because the play to get us down there, to set us up, well, that one should have been a touchdown. Yeah. Spencer should have laid that one out there. Amir had to wait on it, and that's why he got tackled right there. But we did kind of get lucky that Wisconsin, they came out in a just straight up man, and they had one single high safety. Why? I'm not sure, because obviously he didn't get the safety for Wisconsin, didn't get over to help with Amir at the time, and he catches an easy inside fade touchdown like that. So if you can take advantage of those mistakes, because I think we just caught Wisconsin in kind of a mishap a little bit, because that shouldn't have happened. There's no way that safety should have given up that much field. There's no way he can cover that. So I would say, I mean, great route by Amir. I think it was 21 for Wisconsin. He had no chance. He was being reachy, grabby the whole entire game.
Yeah.
He definitely wasn't fast enough to keep up with them. So they weren't calling much in the first half. They finally started calling in the second half. And again, I mean, even if Spencer is off, we have so much talent surrounding him from the top to the bottom that we can just give these guys the ball and let them do their thing.
Defense comes out. We're up 14-0. I'm feeling good. 14-0, up 2 tutters against the Badgers. Defense comes out and forces a punt. I'm like, oh God, this game's over. And Charlie Jones, he's been aggressive all year, and we've loved it all year. And he he lets the ball bounce. It was, you know, sometimes the ball doesn't go quite as far. He lets the ball bounce, realizes that it's actually going to come a little bit softer to him, but it's still continuing downfield. So in his mind, what he's doing for everyone listening is, okay, I don't know how long this ball is going to roll here. I'm going to just, I've called it off. I've called my guys off, but now I'm going to go up and just secure it anyway, so I don't let this roll 5-10 more yards maybe. And what happened was he just didn't get it secured before he picked his eyes up and tried to make a quick move in a positive direction. Ball gets loose. Three plays later, you know, a defense, that's a sudden change. And yes, the defense is taught to deal with those and come out and try and stuff, but a little bit of momentum there. Wisconsin grabs a touchdown and I'm like, ah, come on. Like, this is not the touchdown we need. We can't give them points, right? We then trade punts. We punt in three plays. They punt in three plays. And then we come out and the offense hits another touchdown, a 4-yard drive or 4-play drive, 78 yards. Run for Sargent, run for Sargent. Goodson for 16. And then a pass. I don't know what it's like, a crossing corner route for Amir. He just beat the guy. Like, he's just a better receiver than that guy is a DB. It almost looked like when Tad would run away from guys in high school, you just have a mismatch there. Amir beats him, perfect pass. He outruns him. Amir throws in a little flip at the end.
I know. I hope his ankle's all right.
I hope his ankle's all right too, because I really want, obviously with him scoring a ton of our points, even the last 2 or 3 weeks, he's the weapon that we need on the field. But talk about that play.
Yeah, I think it just goes back to the first half when I said Wisconsin was kind of just sitting back on their heels, two safety looks, and that's, we actually had a two safety look for that play as well. But when we've been pounding the run so many times, I mean, those 1 and 2 yard gains, eventually it opens up the play action, and that's exactly what happened on that. You get the hard runs fake. And when you get that two safety look, well, Amir can use his straight line speed to just absolutely split those two safeties. I didn't see what the boundary side did, but I'm sure the tight end had a little influence on the boundary safety there. So yeah. Then that leaves the field safety, who is Bullard, 25. Yeah. He's a bruiser. Like, he's out there. He's out there knocking heads.
And he can't run with Amir.
No. And honestly, I don't know who can. Right. And so if the linebackers are going to let Amir just run through them without kind of walling them off or giving him a nudge or anything, I mean, it's might as well turn into a 40 time and he's going to win every time. Yeah. So that's how that opened up like that. And it was beautiful and perfect pass. Selly into the end zone. Now he's got a boot on.
Now he's got a boot.
His response to that was perfect. Last game in Kinnick, go out with a bang. He definitely did. I don't think anybody faults him for that. So
I kind of like the fuck you too. Like,
it's like
my second touchdown. I just ran away from your entire defense. I'm just going to flip in the end zone. We're up 2 scores. Like, right. I enjoy it. And then we basically control the rest of the game. They actually go on a 16-yard drive where they finish on a 4th down where they could have had an easy touchdown, but Mertz throws it behind the receiver. I think we sent like an all-out blitz. And Mertz just got, you know, Mertz showing a lot of the similar things that Spencer is showing, right? He's a first-year starter. They flash Jack Cohn on the sideline a couple times on the TV, and you could just see him on the sideline like, he's like helping call plays and stuff.
He can keep sitting there.
Yeah. And we basically control the rest of the game. They turn it over on downs. Then we have a 4-play drive. We have this weird thing where they stop us. You know, there's not much time left on the clock. Torrey Taylor, the savior of Iowa football in Australia itself, tries some Aussie kick where he drops the ball. Quick analysis on that is that basically ball gets cold, ball gets slick, and Torrey's probably not used to that. Snap lobbed in a little bit just because it's hard to put a lot of velocity on it when it's wet and cold outside, whether you're throwing it or snapping it. And so Torrey dropped it and it kind of rolled forward on him towards the oncoming rush. And so he said, fuck it, I'm booting this thing.
Dude, and he took that thing straight to the outback. Oh my god, dude.
He had like a 30 or 40 yard punt off of just a soccer kick. Yeah. you Unfortunately, you can't do that. Even more unfortunately, it gives them the ball. It's a turnover. Well, it's not a turnover, but it's a loss of down penalty, which I didn't know because that play never happens. That didn't make me feel great because it's still a two-score game. But defense comes out. Jack Campbell, young linebacker. We stuff. Mertz doesn't see Campbell in pursuit. He throws it right to Jack Campbell for an interception. Basically secures the seals the deal. We come back out of a media timeout. We've got it as a touchback, and Tyler Goodson shows why he's one of the best running backs in the Big Ten, and just absolutely blitzes the Wisconsin defense. Not just an open lane either. Had to make a couple moves, but absolutely runs away. 28-7, Hawks win. The bowl comes home. It's unfortunate because I know, especially probably from a fan standpoint and a former player standpoint, the rush across the field, the swarm to the trophy when the other team has it is one of the, it's one of the cool things about the rivalry games. Unfortunately, that's not happening this year because of COVID, but a really cool end to the game. And just feels good to have all four trophies back in Iowa City.
It absolutely does. So Tyler, being a special teams guy, did you have any idea of that rule that you can't kick it off the ground once it's been through the hands?
I had no idea. I would not have thought of that in the moment. It makes sense though when you think about it, because if you relate this to like it's hard to kind of quantify like this doesn't look like any other play that would happen, right? So like maybe it is legal. This is essentially like if Spencer was back in shotgun and he caught the snap came back, and this, you know, this is probably a problem that Adrian Martinez has a little bit more than Spencer does, but snap comes back, he drops it. And instead of just falling on the ball, it's now a free ball, right? It's a fumble. It's a loose ball. He can't just turn and kick that thing as hard as he can towards the sideline to just get it out of bounds. Like,
correct.
It's the rule is basically disallowing you to just to bitch out of a play and say, okay, I'm not going to fall on this ball. I'm just going to get this out of play so that we don't have to worry about it. I luckily never had to really deal with that, but I did not know it was a rule.
Yeah, I'm not sure many people that would, and it's just kind of funny that when he was kind of coming up in these games, and the more press he gets, he admits that he's still kind of learning the rules of the game.
Yeah.
So the fact that that happens to him, and the fact that he did that just out of pure instinct, and then he gets penalized for it, lost it down. It's just, you feel so bad for him because he's just out there doing his thing.
I can just imagine him coming off the field like, "Oh fuck me, mate." I didn't know the rules. I love it. It's honestly kind of now that we won the game, it was kind of like this cool little thing that happens. Like, well, we just got a punter back there that just doesn't know what he's doing. He just kicks the ball any way he can. And I'm sure in rugby, you can do that. Like, I'm sure that's probably loose ball on the ground. You can just kick it wherever you want. So I imagine that it was a muscle memory thing kicked in. Like, heat of the moment, adrenaline is pumping. Screw it. I'll just kick the thing and get it out of here.
Yeah, no doubt. Pure instinct took over there. That was very evident.
We go to where Iowa sits now to close this podcast, and that is this odd kind of championship week that the Big Ten is putting on basically to get everybody an extra game in. Initially, it was announced that we would cross over. The Big Ten Championship is obviously the best in both sides, and then it would just be the twos, the threes, the fours. Now there's been a lot of speculation that it's going to be a week of kind of custom mix matching games where we might get Indiana Purdue to play for the Oak Jug or whatever they play for. We might get Minnesota, Wisconsin to play.
Yeah, they play for Paul Bunyan's Axe.
For the Axe.
That's a big rivalry up here.
Yeah, they're trying to maybe mix match some games that didn't happen and prevent some rematches. I think there's a little bit of pushback from that from the Iowa fan base now that we've gone on this run, because we're now going to be, you know, the 14th, 15th, maybe 13th, 12th best team in the country. And we're looking at a potential New Year's Six bowl berth. And if we don't play Indiana, then it kind of hurts. Like, I think Hawkeye fan base is feeling that we need the Indiana, which would be the two seeds of each side, to play to kind of give us that, you know, it would be each team would be ranked. It would be a great game for the Big Ten, and it would be kind of like this birth into the New Year's Six. What do you think about just pairing up Indiana versus Iowa, or in the other scenario, it looks like we potentially get Michigan as a matchup, and we play the Wolverines in Kinnick. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, just more of a fan feel right now. It's tough because you almost do want those rivalry games to be played. I think that just means a lot to the fans at this point in the year. And if you just go outside the Iowa bubble, then all these other teams, it's over for them. But yeah, as an Iowa fan, you most definitely want to play Indiana. They're sitting with a 6-1 record. You look at the records of these other teams: Maryland 2-3, Penn State 3-5, Rutgers 3-5, Michigan 2-4.
You just don't want to play any of them. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no wins. I mean, it's doing nothing for us. Do we want to kick the shit out of Harbaugh in Kinnick? Yeah, I can get behind that, but it just kind of stinks that it also stinks that Blake Penix is out now for Indiana. He was really the bread and butter of that offense and kind of what made them click. They have a very good defense as well. So I think for matchup purposes, if you want to see one more great Iowa game, Big Ten game this year, you're definitely pulling for that Indiana game.
I think that, say they put Iowa versus Michigan, Iowa, we dismantle them. We beat them by 2-3, maybe more touchdowns. And then they do play Indiana versus Purdue, and Purdue beats Indiana.
Yep.
Now Iowa's 7-2. Potentially, I mean, beating Michigan isn't going to do a whole lot for us in the rankings, but it's not going to drop us any if we win another game, especially by a lot of points. I think there's still a chance we grab a New Year's Six bid there. I think that behind Ohio State, assuming that they beat Northwestern, I think at this point, I don't know. I think Iowa might get put in the second best bowl game in the Big Ten schedule or the list of bowl games. I don't know what that looks like. I still think Iowa's got a decent shot at having a really good bowl game here. It'll be interesting to see what happens. But as far as the college football playoff goes, it looks like Alabama just won. Florida just lost. And
Florida lost to LSU. That's a bad loss last night because Florida was really on the doorstep there.
They were on the cusp.
They were on the cusp with one loss, and then they lose to a really, honestly terrible LSU team after the national championship last year. They're out.
What happened with Clemson Notre Dame yesterday? Let me check.
What do you mean?
Did they play?
Just the two teams as general. Notre Dame won. It's showing Clemson 9-1.
So they beat.
But, I mean, essentially your four teams right now are going to be Ohio State, Clemson, Notre Dame, Alabama. You have Texas A&M on the doorstep. Their best win is against Georgia. And then you're looking at the Cyclones, Cincinnati, Georgia, Miami. None of those teams are good enough to be in those top four right now.
Miami just got dog raced.
They got destroyed by
Boat
North
raced.
Carolina.
So Iowa's probably going to jump them. North Carolina and Iowa are both going to move up, and so Miami's going to be behind. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, you got USC still up there. Coastal Carolina lost yesterday to Troy. That Northwestern spot, they're still sitting ahead of us right now. But
Coastal Carolina won, but barely.
Did they?
Yeah, barely. 42-38.
Okay. I think Troy might have taken the lead late. That's what I saw. Maybe
they were close. They scored
lost.
Late and then had a chance, but yeah.
Okay. Okay.
But, yeah. Coastal might. I mean, they keep winning.
It's tough. There's just a lot of teams from the four spot on, well, I should say the five spot on back, really 5 through 16, 17, where Iowa sits right now. I mean, you throw us into the mix.
We could beat any of them.
Yeah, for sure. Any spot that you put us in from this point out, we're right there with anybody. And
what about an Iowa-Iowa State bowl game?
I think that would be fantastic. It would truly give us our last bowl game or trophy game of the year. It would just happen to be a bowl game as well.
Yep.
I think from a fan standpoint, it doesn't get better than that. I mean, the talk from
to
Ames and everybody on social media would be absolutely insane. I mean, it's insane anyways, as it is, when two teams maybe aren't even doing anything.
Yep.
But you put them into a bowl game, a meaningful one, with two definitely damn good teams. Huge.
it might be the perfect end to a year like this year where both teams are good. They didn't get to play each other because of the no non-conference, and you just settle it at the end of the year and whoever wins gets the bragging rights. And
yeah, whoever wins, hats off to you. Whoever loses, get ready for next year.
Yeah.
Because you're going to play again. So, and I think it would be a perfect cap to the season.
I am all for it. Blake Gimble, everybody, making his true co-host appearance on the podcast. Blake, thanks for joining me today on short notice.
No, thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun. I will talk Hawks any day of the week. So you got my number. You know where to find me.
I do have your number. I've had it for about 15 years.
When I got a cell phone, you were the first person I texted. Said, Tyler, I got a phone. And you're just at home. I don't care. You've had a phone for 3 years because you know I was late on everything. So
Blake got a phone in like sophomore year of high school.
I did.
That's it. Watch Up Walk-Ons 171. We don't know for sure who we play, but the boys will be back later this week to talk about it. Hope you guys enjoyed Blake and my analysis of the game today. Thank you so much for continuing to listen. It's a good day. It's a good week. The Hawks are 6-2. The Bowl is back in Iowa City, and we will talk at you again next time. Thank you so much.
I'm MJ Acosta-Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.